Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how's it going on this cold, foggy, misty night?
Well, not that cold. Oh, I don't think it's that cold out there, Don. Yeah. It is foggy. Kind of reminds you of Vancouver or Seattle, up mm-hmm. in the great northwest, if you will. You know, what the heck? We could have, you know, 8, 9, 10 inches of snow on the ground. I mean, we're just think we're blessed, man. And, you know, we're in a city that outgoing mayor is going to become the new education czar, get you colored people educated, help you make up the deficiency that you represent. We got hundreds and hundreds of jobs for African Americans and et cetera on the big, beautiful stadium downtown and mm-hmm. well as some of the other projects. So it's kind of like the old sitcom of the 1970s. Happy days are here again. You know, what is that, Don?
Well, first of all, Mr. Edwards, you know, for the last few weeks here, you know, I've been kind of concerned about the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, I'll just say, granting Summit Academy OIC and Lewis King $700,000 for training individuals to work on the stadium. And those of us that are thinking people with a little common sense understand that the technical skills are the artisans, as you say, Mr. Edwards, needed to build something like that. They're going to need more than 2 years of training. And by the time they go through Summit Academy, the stadium should be done. And so, what had happened was, I made contact with a graduate of Summit Academy, OIC, who felt, and I'm going to let him talk in a minute here, but he just felt that he needed, you know, a little bit more higher education because of what was going on at Summit. And I'd actually like to bring him in right now. We'll just go by his first name. His name is Ronnie. Ronnie, welcome to the Ron and Don Show. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
Okay, I'm doing great, sir. We really appreciate your time tonight. We won't keep you that long. But, you know, when did you go to Summit Academy? Can you just – you have a really great story that you actually sent me via a post. And can we just start there? I think that's the best place for us to go at this point.
Well, I started Summit Academy exactly in January of 2011, and you know, I had bought into the whole idea that in 20 weeks I was going to be able to, you know, be making a living wage, and I was going to have this training that was going to help me support me and my family. And through the course of graduating, found out that, you know, that was farthest from the truth.
Mm. And well, tell me about the test that you were given at Summit Academy.
They had us there saying we were training to be pre-apprentice carpenters. And you know, after graduation, and when you're trying to get jobs, and you're putting Summit Academy, you know, on your resume, and people are interviewing you and laughing like the joke's on you. You know, it finally took one construction guy, you know, company to tell me there's no such thing. And
excuse me, Ron, because of our listening audience and et cetera, and their familiarity with particular discipline, there was no such what? What was the gentleman talking about? There was no such what?
There was no such position. There was no such position as a pre-apprentice carpenter. He was like, you're either an apprentice carpenter, that's how you start out. He was like, there's no such thing as a pre-apprentice carpenter. There's no way you can be trained for something that doesn't exist.
Uh-huh.
And the other, you know, because you go for, everybody goes for pre-apprentice carpentry, and then the other discipline I went there for was weatherization tech. And that was supposed to prepare me to be able to help weatherize homes. And, you know, through the 20 weeks, we never studied weatherization until the 2 weeks before the graduation. And when we get to the end of the 18 weeks and the 2 weeks of graduation, you know, they ushered everybody into this room, and the instructors handed us the answers to the test. Like, here are the answers to the test. Don't worry about it. You can't fail.
Mm. And this test was being taken to certify and qualify you to do what?
To be a weatherization tech, to be able to go into a home and weatherize a Minnesota home against the Minnesota winters.
Okay, and they gave, are you saying, sir, that they gave you, at this organization, that they gave you the answers to the test?
The answers were supplied to everyone in attendance. We were ushered in one big room in Summit Academy, and the instructors, the instructors actually came into this room and were like, you guys don't have to worry about failing. Here are the answers to the test.
Okay.
So
now, have you ever gotten, by the way, after you graduated, did you ever get a job in the industry?
Never. I was, well, when I went for the weatherization tech after being turned down for being a pre-apprentice carpenter, I found out that I was nowhere near adequately trained to be a weatherization tech. It takes more than not just 2 weeks, it takes more than 20 weeks to be trained in that discipline in itself.
Okay. By the way, what was your fee? Were you subsidized by the federal government or by the state, or did you have to pay for this training, or was it free, or what?
No, we actually had to take out a Pell Grant, which actually just affected me at MCTC, but we had to take out a federal Pell Grant, and all that went to Summit Academy. You know, and at this time, you know, there was no textbooks. You know,
Let me cut in here. There was no textbooks. That they've been doing training down there for over a decade. You mean they didn't have any written material, no textbooks, and nothing like that?
Each construction instructor had his own print-ups of what to do, and you know, but there was like no basic curriculum. And when it came down to the weatherization, that was all hands-on training for a week. You know, you watched a couple videos on how to spray foam into an attic, and that was it.
How much was your Pell Grant for? I mean, what, $800,
$1,500, $2,000? How much? I want to recall and say it was $2,500 offhand.
Okay.
But my mind is telling me it was the whole $5,000 because I know it ended up costing me more to go to Summit Academy for 20 weeks than it cost me to go to the MCTC for a semester, my very first semester, as far as Pell Grant goes.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead. So you take this test, you pass the test, you graduate, and you don't get a job in the industry. We're going to stay on the industry that you were being trained in as a carpenter and a weatherizer. Is that correct?
That's correct. Never receive employment. The only employment, it got so bad, they took a couple of us graduates that had graduated in the top 7% of the class, and they basically temp agencied us out to Roxanne Givens, and they had us help remodel on the African-American
museum. You were one of the gentlemen standing there by the stairs in that story done by Randy First. Am I correct?
I was the first batch because they got rid of all of us. Because they had us working on the museum and in a church, like on 38th of Chicago. And when we started demanding more than the $8 they were paying us because of...
You were being paid $8?
$8 an hour. And when we demanded, you know, construction worker raises, we were like, even our apprentice wages, we were letting go. Because they had us working on the church, too, on 38th in Chicago, and me and the other three gentlemen were like, well, whoa, you got us working on two different sites, and we're working 10 hours a day, and you're only giving us $8 an hour. This isn't how we told this was going to work.
Now, are you comfortable with identifying who was the construction company on both sites that you were working for?
There was no construction company. We were working strictly for Roxanne Givens, and she had a gentleman supervising her supervisor for, and I cannot recall this gentleman's name.
Okay, well, who did you work for on the church?
Roxanne Gibbons sent us over there.
Oh, so she was like a broker? I mean, she was taking you guys around and brokering you and getting you work for almost for less than minimum wages. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, go ahead, sir.
And when we brought it up to this gentleman and Miss Gibbons, he told us, well, Miss Gibbons is not going to pay you what you're asking for that we can actually get some immigrant workers off Craigslist cheaper. And I was the first to let go, and they let the other few gentlemen go that same week and brought in a whole other crew.
Now, both the other gentlemen, as well, obviously you are an African-American. The other two gentlemen were African-Americans also?
Yes, sir.
And you say they brought in Central American or South American immigrants, is that correct?
They told us they could get them cheaper. They said they can get them cheaper than the $15 an hour we were demanding for all this work.
Okay.
And we were let go. And ever since then, any chance I've gotten to speak out about this travesty of Summit Academy, I've taken it because, you know, a lot of men like me, you know, we're sold that bill of goods that this can change our lives. And you put trust in this organization because you see an African-American man at the helm and you think that it's going to be something that's going to change your life for the better. And when you go on interviews, people are laughing at you like, oh, you didn't know the joke was on you?
Okay, let me ask you the name of an individual that was associated at the time that I believe you were still there and this was going on. Mr. Alex Tittle, what was your relationship with him? You remember him, and was he on the premises? Okay, tell us about that.
I had a pretty good relationship with Mr. Tittle, and he was kind of, you know, he kind of advocated for some of the students as far as I've seen. You know, he was always, you guys stick it out. We're going to try to make this work. We're going to find ways. And then after the whole African-American Museum incident, I went back to Summit to talk to Mr. Tittle, and he was gone.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. The reason I asked about Mr. Tittle, because I'm aware of what his job portfolio was supposed to be. Did Summit involve itself in helping you or making any referrals for you?
No.
They didn't have a referral system?
No, sir.
Oh, man. All right, Mr. Allengard, go ahead. Maybe you got a couple questions. Wow.
Well, no, I just wanted to get Ronnie on kind of to position, you know, and make our evidence stronger on why, you know, you would grant an agency. And this is not the first time, Mr. Edwards, I've heard you've heard stories like this.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, this is a recurring – I mean, I have a videotape of a guy that talked about this same thing that Ronnie's talking about. And, I mean, it's absolutely nuts. And to spend that kind of money at a training school for 20 weeks and not see reap any rewards or benefits or even a good job, you know, I think we should pay close attention to that. So.
Absolutely. Anything else that you have, Ronnie, that you feel is important for the public and the listening audience to know that you want to share? Go right ahead.
A cancer in the black community that needs to be addressed because there are black men and women that are going there seeking to redeem themselves and to really try to do something with their lives. And it's sad when you apply 20 weeks of your life and you buy into it and you start to look at everybody there like poverty pimps. And it's a really sad thing.
All right.
It's a really sad thing.
All right, sir, I want to thank you for let me ask you this question, not because I have any doubt of what you said, but this is in anticipation of texts or messages or et cetera that will be sent to my associate, Mr. Allen. And obviously, Mr. Allen has made me aware that you've been crying out on this for quite some time. Are you prepared to sign an affidavit relevant to what you just said on this program?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. All right. That's all I know I need to hear. All right, Ronnie, want to thank you for taking the time to come on
thanks,
the Ron and Don Show.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We'll talk.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Wow, Mr. Allen, that I know that, we will be viewed as persons of ill repute and liars, and you have a serious mental problem, but but the fact of the matter is, when you asked a person, are they prepared to sign a sworn affidavit, and they said unequivocally yes, I think people really need to be concerned. And it looked like some other players and actors showed up here as what kind of labor. Maybe we, the reason we didn't get the museum and the $3 million, maybe the $3 million went to the church on 38th in Chicago. I'm trying to remember what church that is. That was a church where there was a smooth black minister was operating out of there, and he's left town. Maybe he left, I don't know, maybe he left with part of the $3
million. Yeah, I know exactly what church he's talking about up there. It's very interesting.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but I met the pastor before, Mr. Edwards, a while back, and so it's going to be pretty interesting to see how this all plays out. So.
Wow, yeah. Okay, well, Don, we've got a whole lot of other things. One of the things we wanted to talk about, too, for our international and national audience, boy, they were really trying to keep this undercover. Minneapolis police officer last Thursday here in our beloved city attempted to board a aircraft en route to or destined for New Mexico with a loaded revolver, and I guess it was pretty ugly. And the police officer who is head of the unit that allegedly deals with sex prostitution, sex gang prostitution, was the officer in question, has a long history. He was in the forefront of destroying the Black Police Officers Association a number of years ago, and also was involved in testimony indicating black police officers were criminals and et cetera. None of that stood up. But I was kind of taken back when I looked and saw that he would make that kind of mistake when all officers, particularly a sergeant such as himself who's been in the elite units, he was a part of the Metro Gang Task Force and the VOTAC unit, the Violent Offenders Task Force, that cost the city about $3 million, right, in damages and et cetera for whipping people and taking their money and taking their valuables and all that. But he knows the policy. Let me just state the policy very quickly, and then we'll move on. This officer clearly knew that the protocol and policy of both the city, the state, indirectly, and the federal government, absolutely directly, is that when you are preparing to travel and you feel that you need to bring your weapon with you, particularly on your carry-on, okay, I mean, wow, you know, you are to notify the chief of your department. You are to indicate the need for carrying your weapon on the aircraft. You are to indicate the police matters that you're going to be involved in that requires you to carry your sidearm with you. Once you receive that letter from the chief of the department, not talking about some lieutenant or even some commander, et cetera, it is the chief directly. In this case, it would be Chief Janae Harto. You then, when you arrive at the airport, you have that letter in your possession. It's a letter of authorization. You present it to the TSB agents. That's the Transportation Safety Group. They review it. They then give you a form that you then fill out, in fact, reaffirming what it is that is being said by the chief in the letter. You talk in terms of your destination, what police work you're involved in, if you're working undercover or et cetera. You then present that affidavit at a special gate that you go into that accesses you into the plane. The crew is given a copy. They are aware that there is a passenger or passengers on board that flight who are armed. And then the responsibilities and the requirements of the statute slash law has been satisfied. And, you know, the good sergeant knew that he was violating the heck out of all the protocol, and then he lawyered up as soon as they asked him what his business and purpose was in New Mexico. You know, he lawyered up, and that really has created some problems. And the word is that the Transportation Safety Group agency is going to ask the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota to file formal charges. Now, the Internal Affairs Unit of the Minneapolis Police Department, I understand from sources within the federal authorities, that the Internal Affairs Unit is investigating this matter. It is somewhat troubling in light of the many, 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 many problems that some of the law enforcement officers assigned to the Minneapolis Police Department have had here over the last number of months. You know, it's not anything you take lightly, given the whole 9/11, you know, you and I clearly know, to try to board a commercial aircraft with a loaded gun. I mean, wow, that's just not something you just dismiss and pretend like, oh, it's okay. You know, no harm, no foul, you know, and business as usual. So, interesting story, very, very well almost hid in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with this case, okay? Just kind of the background on it. Grant Snyder, Sergeant, Minneapolis Police Department, attempts to enter or board an American commercial aircraft armed. Wow. If you did that, Don, we wouldn't even be talking to you. You'd be in 11th Ward already.
Yeah, right away.
And you're a conservative. That's Don Allen of the right. What else we got, Don? What are we looking at, man?
Well, I am looking at this online here. This Chicago, was it Chisago County Republican Party, Minnesota? It's a county right outside.
Chisago.
Yeah, I was having trouble with it. Yeah, I had a piece of licorice in my mouth. There was a post made on their Facebook page that was in poor taste, and
blackface. Oops.
Yeah. I'm looking for it. I'm actually, someone had a screenshot, and they just texted me, Mr. Edwards, and that's why I was kind of scattered there for a minute. They're looking for a screenshot to send me exactly. They said you will be shocked when you get this picture. So I'm kind of in a holding pattern on that, so I can see exactly what they're talking about here. So
okay, this comes on the heels of some controversy here in Minnesota over the issue of the Redskins, right? The Washington Redskins.
Exactly.
NFL professional football team that will be here for a Thursday night game on next Thursday the 7th. Looks like tensions are rising, if you will. I know there have been negotiations between security personnel for the American Indian Movement, AIM, and local authorities. Looks like they're trying to get the security for that game, that Thursday night game, worked out. Looks like there could be quite a gathering of high-profile individuals in support of Mr. Clyde Belcourt, the national director of AIM. And this controversy that has exploded, the owner, by the way, of the current owner of the Washington Redskins has said he'll never change the name. And I'm puzzled by that because Dan Snyder is Jewish, and I just kind of wonder what would happen if someone, you know, decided or had the power to name his team the Washington Kikes of the National Football League? You know, I wonder how Dan would feel about that. Or, you know, I wonder what his disposition would be. I'm pretty sure he and the Jewish community would be pretty upset if that, you know, kind of reference was made, if you will. But it is a hot issue. The Sports Facility Authority, which we've talked about quite a bit on this program, totally rejected Mr. Belcourt and a very large delegation of elder Native American leaders that came to a meeting last week. Doesn't seem to be getting a lot of support from the black leadership, but then our black leadership is busy getting some of that big education money from the Koch brothers. Oops, wasn't supposed to say that, were we?
Uh-oh.
But anyways, Native American. By the way, phone lines open on this Redskin issue. Yeah, give that number, Don. You know, somebody.
Phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You can give us a call. We'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, the Washington Redskins. The Redskins, by the way, is not a term or a reference of endearment. I mean, we all know that, man. I mean, it's really sad to see in a so-called liberal state like our Minnesota. You know, we applauded what the Native Americans did in North Dakota, where they finally made the institution up there make the word Fighting Sioux disappear. Though there are some younger Native Americans that seem to think that that's all right. They really don't understand where the and the kind of disdain the reference to Redskins implies. You know what I'm saying? So I just hope people understand it. But it looks like we could have some interesting circumstances here. You know, the networks have been asked not to use, and I counted it on Monday Night Football. Now, I kind of like that broadcasting team per se, but they said Redskins 160 sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. 160 sometimes during that broadcast Monday night. They said Redskins. I said, God dang it, you know. It appears that there is a division in America that I guess it's all right to disrespect and defame the culture and the race of another group of people if they're not quote-unquote Caucasians like you, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, yeah, but that's the way it is. But what else we got, man? We got a new education czar coming in. It's going to help the downtrodden Negro children be better educated, Don. Did you see this coming? Did you see mayor?
See it coming. I did not see that coming. Because they just, the old executive director, did he go to the Minneapolis Public Schools?
Gore. Yeah, they purposely brought Gore back here from Boston to keep the seat warm for Mayor R.T. Ryback. Now, here's the thing I have to say about the outgoing mayor who chose not to run for another term is that I was watching him today at news conference, and he was, you know, he looked sincere. I mean, you know, you always look sincere. They always look sincere when they talk about the Albert Schweitzer mentality of helping the poor, you know, beleaguered, downtrodden Negro. Mm-hmm. But he was talking in terms of, you know, his commitment and what he wanted to do, and I kept looking at him, and because of my own role over many, many years, I kind of said, dang, I wonder how this is going to work. This is a man who, for 12 years as mayor, refused to hire these young African-American children's parents to work, but yet he's going to educate them, or in this case, I guess he's going to train them, okay, because the Koch brothers who are running this organization, oops, and pouring the money in. And by the way, Mr. Allen, my associate, has done some extensive research on the board of directors. I was kind of surprised that that the board so easily brought the mayor off the board and made him the – my understanding is his salary will be about $200,000.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe we can get some confirmation from – some of those on the inside, but that board is one powerful board. President of the University of Minnesota, or a couple other university presidents,
Sandy Vargas
of the Minneapolis Foundation. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Gary Cunningham, Chief Program Officer, Northwest Area Foundation.
He's a member of the board.
Yes, he is. And Bernadette Johnson, Superintendent, Minneapolis Public Schools. Peter McLaughlin.
Bring some of the names to us, Don. That's good.
Yeah,
people I know are trying to.
Eric Muhammad, Principal, Harvest Prep, Seed Academy. Peter McLaughlin.
Eric Mahmoud.
Peter McLaughlin, Commissioner, Hennepin County, Commissioner.
Okay.
Let me see. Lynn Norgren, President of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. Kim Price, Director President of Community Affairs for 3M. Let me see here. Stephen Rosenstone, Chancellor, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And so,
now, is
this
the Reverend Clarence Hightower his boss?
I think it is. Yes, he is, because Clarence is the chair of the board for the Minnesota State College in Minsky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. These are some real players, man. Go ahead.
Yeah,
because the phone lines are open for anybody that's got any question with this high-power group and how they went about determining the selection of outgoing Mayor R.T. Ryback to be the new overlord for the education of the Negro children and other children of color. because here in Minnesota and here in Minneapolis School District, 87-88% of white students graduate, only allegedly 44%. By the way, that number is inflated. My associate, Mr. Allen, gave us an in-depth report about 2 months ago that we received from the Department of Education here in the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, well, that's quite a powerful group, man. Woo! Wow. We got the husband of possibly the next mayor of the city, Betsy Hodges, her husband, Gary Cunningham, the African-American number two at Northwest Area Foundation, if you will. Whew, That is one powerful group. Now, what is their goal? I mean, other than to get rid of public education.
Yeah, it says I'm reading. Let me just go to that tab because it has an About Us, and I want to find out. Generation Next is a broad partnership of organizations and leaders from across the Twin Cities, the first of its kind. We represent local schools, government, community organizations, and program businesses, higher education, and philanthropy, all dedicated to educational excellence and narrowing the achievement gap. Not closing it, just narrowing it. Our vision, to ensure children of all socioeconomic backgrounds are well prepared for success in the 21st century. Their mission, that was their vision I just read, their mission is to dramatically accelerate education achievements for all children from early childhood through the career through the aligned partnership of community stakeholders.
So that's consistent with the plan put in place by the United Way about 5 years ago, which there was great controversy, where some real powerful sources said we need to control the Negro babies from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah, well, you know, the United Way, it is the full title of this is Generation Next, the United Way.
Okay, now this is consistent also for our listening audience with the position paper presented by Mayor R.T. Ryback at the National League of Cities in 2009 and consistent with a special commission that he appointed back in 2006-2007, which talked in terms that the greatest threat to the enhancement of Minneapolis as a city, economically, socially, and et cetera, was the guaranteed failure of Negro children. I mean, that's a fact. His position paper was presented, I remember, on program here 2.5 years ago. We really hammered at it, got some interesting calls. But this is consistent with the recommendations of controlling the little black children from the womb to the grave, from the cradle to the grave. Wow, okay. So outgoing Mayor R.T. Ryback is basically going to guarantee the continued what of the African-American child?
I have no idea. This is the model is in. The model is based off of Strive Network, and Strive is Strive Together is like, it looks like it's in Cincinnati, Ohio. And
Yes, it is. Yes. That's where Mr. Gore was for a while. That's where he was trained at. Mr. Gore was trained there.
Wow.
In between being in Memphis and Boston and then being assigned and brought in to do what's being happened. Yeah, Cincinnati is, that's the training portal. I'll use that reference, the training portal, as it pertains to this master plan. I mean, this is a well-designed plan by the Walmart Foundation and by the Koch brothers with some assistance, I hate to say it, but with some assistance from the Gates Foundation in Seattle.
Mr. Rose, I need to go over this with you because what you said was absolutely correct. Uh-oh, you got a caller?
Let's check it here. Hold it just a minute.
Okay.
Hello? Yeah, on the air. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, call coming in. Told them they called the wrong number, need to call the right number. But I think it was an attempt to indicate that there is some real unhappiness with us right now, reading some of those names on the big board.
What you just said about from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah.
Listen to this, Mr. Edwards. They have a picture of, imagine this, they have a picture of a baby, key benchmarks. They have a picture of a toddler. They have a picture of a fourth grader. They have a picture of a seventh grader. It says by the seventh grade signpost, a child should understand what it means to go to college and will develop expectations about his post-secondary education. Eighth grade is a significant point, a measurement of math skills, basic algebra is learned, also a milepost of emotional and social development. The final point, and then the adult here, after graduation, the final point of the roadmap marks the career. The end of the goal of education is fulfillment, economic and personal. Colleges and businesses need to provide the necessary support service, including increased co-opportunities to help meet their goal. So they have it. The Strive in Cincinnati has it laid out from there's a chart here from birth to, you know, the senior in college from age 2 to 21 and And I'm just looking at the let me just see the roadmap. That's the roadmap, and they had in a Strive Together story. They want a 9% rise in kindergarten readiness, an 11% increase in high school graduation, and a 10% increase in college enrollment. So that is pretty interesting.
Well, it's quite sad, Mr.
Allen.
Call,
Mr. Edwards.
Let's get the caller. That's probably maybe it's the call that came in. Let's get the caller. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You still there, Don?
Oh, they okay. Yeah, I'm here. They call back, caller. I just clicked on you, and you you must have hung up. So hopefully they will call back. Our phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. We're talking about this R.T. Rybak and Generation Next, the Greater Twin Cities United Way at 404 South A Street in Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55404. And it looks like they basically duplicated the website from the Strive.
Is now that right?
Now that I'm navigating it, yeah, a lot of the same information is sitting right there. And I'm going kind of back and forth comparing screens in this studio. And you see things blinking over here. And I'm just wondering here, you know, this is Minnesota has always tried, you know, the powers that be try to imitate something that works well somewhere else. And they will quick to get someone out of town to come here and work, even though in their backyards they have PhDs, people with master's degrees and experience, and they end up failing at it for the most part. So this is really interesting.
Yeah,
watch this real closely. And let me see the staff here. We have a staff for Generation Next. Okay, they got Ryan, Frank Fornsberg is the senior vice president, who's the interim director right now. And they have someone else there pretty irrelevant there, just an administrative assistant. And I'm looking at let me just look here for these guys here. The origin theory of action, vision. I want to find out who these folks are here. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
No, listen on Strive.
Yeah, well,
Strive does not have their folks down like that.
Well, we've done some extensive research. Let me just refer for purposes of reference. Actually, this is a relative of mine from the Edwards side of my family. PC wrote back around 1901. It was predicated on, the title is 25 Years in the Black Belt by William James Edwards. And the document that he wrote, which talked in terms of the genocide, the plan for genocide against the Negro, can be recaptured at the University of North Carolina Charlotte Library, Davis Library. Call number is E185.82.E25. Document I would encourage some who are in the business of history and education and et cetera, though this is a relative of mine. He was quite a researcher and et cetera, and as I said, the documentation and his memoirs and et cetera are contained at the Davis Library at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. After I got the call early this morning that the selection of the outgoing mayor of the city of Minneapolis would be formally announced, I began to do some additional research in concert with my associate, Mr. Allen. We found some very disturbing documentation, which is consistent with what you, Mr. Allen, have just shared with us, as well as Mayor R.T. Rybak's position paper delivered to the National League of Cities in 2009, where he talked about the African-American male specifically was the problem with respect to meaningful education, attainment, achievement, and et cetera, and actually indicated that there was a serious mental condition that existed within the African-American population here in the city of Minneapolis. And that is all documented for anyone that dares challenge. It is documented. In fact, the documents are on my own personal website. This is very dangerous, what is at play here. And let me just say this to you, Mr. Allen, because I don't know if you were present when this happened at the Minneapolis School Board meeting. A gentleman by the name of Alfred Flowers, who is an activist here, confronted the board and some of the representatives that you've just identified in that document
mm-hmm.
as having earlier that day been involved in a very mean-spirited discussion about the incompetency and the guaranteed failure of the Negro community, and particularly of Negro children. And what happened, Lynn Norgren, it made sense now, what happened, Lynn Norgren, the president of the Teachers Federation, took grave exception. Unfortunately, when the information was put out, they realized that she had revealed some very hostile observations about us in the African-American community. And she, in fact, became an immediate target. And what happened was Mr. Cunningham and others were actually assigned to begin a series of attacks on her. And now I have even a better understanding because some of them were in that meeting. Those board mm-hmm. members that you named were in that meeting. Lynn Norgren apparently took grave exception to the kinds of statements that were being made by the heads of foundations and et cetera. And the disdain, the absolute disdain that they showed for, quote-unquote, the future of the African-American children. We would challenge any of them to give us a call and dialogue with us with regards to the hostility and the attacks on the president of the Teachers Federation for revealing, if you will, identifying with detail and specificity their attacks on the African-American community and its children. And they have now selected, as we said before, the overseer, who will, in fact, basically move towards the, down the elimination of public education in the city of Minneapolis. I'm not shocked, but it's really disappointing that the superintendent of Mass Public Schools would sit there and allow that kind of rancorness to take place. Really
okay,
sad day.
We have a call.
Oh, let's get him. Let's get the caller.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello, caller, you're live on the air. Okay, they hung up again. Okay.
Wow, maybe they just want to be in the chat room, but they, you know,
that's,
certainly
that's
welcome. Not... Again, give that number. I mean, we're, you know, the lines are open. This is a pivotal historical moment in our city, with the announcement that the outgoing mayor, who has done nothing for the African-American community, he certainly hasn't done anything in the area of education, is going to be the new overseer.
Yes, yes. That number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, this person keeps calling, and I think they have a bad
connection.
I just put their number into the queue to see if we could see if this is actually a real number or a clone, and it's going to tell me in two seconds here. It's actually dialing, but no, it's not a good number. So so that's someone playing a game.
It's a clone? It's a clone number?
Yeah, that's
okay.
What it looks like.
Okay.
So it looks like I've been trying to dial it here through the switchboard, and it's not letting me.
Yeah, well, that indicates a clone. We are pretty good here on the Donnie Ronnie. You know, we maybe got some of our training from the NSA. Oops. Yeah. What else do we have, Don, with respect to this? Name the organization again, if you would, Don, for our listening audience around the country and across the world. And you say they are located, of course they are, in Cincinnati, Ohio. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the Strive organization. Let me get back there to that page. I was on their blog site, but let me just go back to their homepage because I was looking for, like, the board of directors and folks like that. And they're not listed on here, but they're listed. They're in Cincinnati, downtown, one West 4th Street.
Probably right down there by the Carew building, Carew Towers, there in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Carew Towers there. Oops, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. I thought we'd have some calls from those that say they're about the business of education. Again, we want to repeat that the board of this organization, not Stride, but its Minnesota subsidiary, has announced that three-term Mayor R.T. Ryback has been selected to facilitate and basically have all the monies for closing the achievement gap, and I think you said it very well just a while ago, Mr. Allen. I find it interesting. They don't say, overcoming the achievement gap. It says just kind of closing the gap, whatever that means.
Narrowing it.
So again, that phone number. I'm interested to see if there are any callers out there that may be able to get here from our beloved city. Of course, others across the country are welcome. Oh, Sarah.
Stand by.
Oh, we're getting dual reactions. Go ahead.
Yes. This is the number that.
That's a clone number. It's clone.
Yeah. Let's see if we get an answer.
Mm-hmm. I've seen my good friends in the military run this kind of clone operation. Oops.
Hello, you're live on the air.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Real good, sir. What can we do for you?
I don't think that we should be surprised at the fact that Daniel Snyder refuses to change the name of Houston Redskins, albeit very offensive. I don't think that we should be surprised that this multi-billionaire doesn't change the name of his multi-billionaire enterprise. So I think that we got to take that with a grain of salt, and I think that although there's nothing wrong with people expressing their opinion about their unhappiness about the name of it, I just don't think that we should look for Snyder or anyone making millions of dollars, except for some of the college schools, to be surprised if they won't change their names.
Okay, but I appreciate that observation, sir, but let me tell you one of the things that's happening. Of course, the local two major papers here, St. Paul and Minneapolis, the Native Americans have been in meetings. Yesterday they met with the lieutenant governor of the state and presented her with a list of statutes here in the state of Minnesota which indicates that there cannot be displays or promotions of racial animus and et cetera under Minnesota law within a facility that is receiving taxpayers' dollars, which is what the Viking Stadium is receiving. They have a meeting with Governor Mark Dayton early next week, probably Monday, at least 3 days before the Thursday night game. And they have, as I said just seconds ago, they have cited Minnesota law, which indicates that you can't do that. And Webster's Dictionary clearly, and that's what the white folks always go by, Webster's Dictionary clearly indicates that the reference and the term Redskins is racially motivated, racially driven, and is not a term of endearment. And so there is some pressure on the state now, who are one of the owners of the current stadium and the new one and et cetera, to make a political decision. Now, in the case of Dan Snyder, you're absolutely right, but here's what happened, sir. This afternoon in Washington, D.C., Joe Madison, who is one of the few black radio commentators that we have left in America, but who is a very powerful man, convened a meeting because the District of Columbia, though the Washington team plays outside of Washington, D.C., in Landover, Maryland, the fact of the matter is that there are some legal provisions that have to do with the Washington team being able to do business because they are incorporated in the District of Columbia. So you're right. I mean, Dan Snyder, does not feel compelled to do anything but stick his finger up. He said, like the previous owner, the legendary racist George Preston Marshall, said way back when he put the name Redskins on his team, that he doesn't believe in integration, he doesn't believe in respect, and that Dan Snyder now says that the name will never change. And boy, never is never, but sometimes never does not always stay in place. But your additional observations, what do you think the position of the NFL should be?
Well, I think it binds Roger Goodell's hands. From a legal standpoint, he doesn't want to deal with any more lawsuits. I mean, they just panned out for these concussion-every guys. But
right.
I think also, and he doesn't want to offend him, because I do take Roger Goodell as being a really good guy, and he
mm-hmm.
does believe it's offensive. But I don't think that there's much that Goodell can do. What can he do? Force him? I don't think so. Then he has.
Oh, he can't do anything because the 32 owners are his bosses. Yeah.
Exactly.
Then they
sue him and things
like
that. Exactly. So it's extremely offensive. We wouldn't want the national N-words or anything like that. But I just think that the more realistic point that we've got to look at is that Snyder isn't going to do it. Now, we've had some college schools change their names, and kudos to those schools that were smart enough to do that. But I just don't
like
think
University
that,
of North Dakota, right up here next to us. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I hope a lot of more teams follow suit. But I do think that the reality is, even though it's 2013, there are a lot of people that are racist that head the organizations that don't want the names changed because they call it, quote, tradition. And I think that's what a lot of fans of these schools and pro teams will, too, take offense to because of the name of tradition. It doesn't matter. Listen, nowadays you've got some of these folks still waving Confederate flags and saying that this isn't, that isn't racist. That, you know, I'm from the South. Well, so am I. You don't see me having one above my house neither.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. The Confederate flag denotes to me the swastika, okay?
Exactly.
And I just don't understand how people can call themselves patriotic Americans and display the Confederate flag when you talk about the history. The Confederate flag was used for the purpose of insurrection and civil war in this country, tore this country apart. And I just don't understand how people like to play the game of endearment with the Confederate flag. The Confederate flag stands on the same pedestal with the swastika, okay? End of discussion. All right, sir. Appreciate your observations. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir.
And
Go ahead, man. We got another call. Let's shoot him.
Oh, no. I just want to tell you, there's a move. There's a petition done by this young lady in New Orleans. Her name is Lydia Woolard, and from New Orleans, Louisiana. She's asking Congress to revoke the tax-exempt status of the National Football League.
She has
a petition now with 288,000 signatures on it, and she's talking about how Roger Goodell makes $30 million a year, earning more than the heads of companies like Coca-Cola and Walmart, and $30 billion in TV deals, and they don't have to pay any federal or corporate tax. And so she's really getting it rolling here on this.
And by the way, two Native American women, one by the name of Black Horse, were in that meeting in Washington, D.C., convened by Joe Madison of XF Radio. They have filed suit in the federal court of the district. They have initiated a similar suit. And part of the discussion today was strategies for possible demonstrations at Washington professional football games in Landover, Maryland. And it's going to be very interesting, but the court has not rejected just what you read. The court has not rejected petitions to bring suit, particularly on the whole issue of quote-unquote tax exemption, which the NFL has enjoyed for a long time, man, you know. And like you said, or like, you know, the lawsuit said, they make a lot of money. They make a lot of money, yeah.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Give that number out again. Call lines open. We've talked about the so-called Redskin situation. We've been talking about education. Apparently we don't get anybody that's prepared to deal with the selection of the current mayor of the city of Minneapolis, who is stepping down on December 31st, who maintains that he has the answers for, quote-unquote, the educational gap or the achievement gap or intellectual gap or whatever else. And, you know, I don't know what the mayor's educational background is, but I repeat what I said earlier at the top of the program on this. Here's a man whose legacy will be that he wouldn't hire the parents, so we expect him to educate the children. That doesn't make much sense, does it, Don?
No, I don't make, it doesn't make no sense at all. I mean, we watched him, Mr. Edwards, here just, you know, everything just spew out of his mouth. I'm going to focus on North Minneapolis. I'm going to focus on this and focus on that. And he's actually done nothing, not a thing, you know.
Nah,
and so
nah.
It's unfortunate that, you know, it was a power move. You know, he needed a job, and he talked his way into it, I guess, and he's there. But, you know, we have to watch this real closely, the whole kit and caboodle here with him being with the Generation Next and what's going to happen with this. So
that's
just,
right.
Just
now,
doesn't,
my understanding is, by the way, let me very quickly, we're going to 10 o'clock. Is that right?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, okay. We're going for another 32 minutes. So the phone lines will continue to be open. We've got some other discussions that are in play, some other things happening here in our beloved community and et cetera. But I didn't want you to lose your train of thought there, Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Continue right on with respect to the education thing here.
Yeah, and the education piece is really important because, you know, right now when I received that information from the Minnesota Department of Education, I was really concerned that only 22% of African Americans were reading and doing math, which means, which says to me that if you're in the 12th grade and you're only doing 22% of the population of the school kids are only doing that well, you know, someone's not being able to make change, and that does not lead to a job. So I don't think Ryback understands the significance of this. We have a telephone call, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's get him. Okay.
You're live on
30
the air.
Minutes
Who's
left.
Calling? Hello, you're live on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello. How
yeah,
are
we
you?
Hear you. Go right ahead, madam. What's your question?
I'm calling because I'm very familiar. I'm very, very familiar with what you all are discussing. And I would like to say that you all need to take a look at the Itasca Project.
Uh-huh.
And the Itasca Project is heavily involved with what's going on in Minneapolis. Minneapolis, Northside has been the, might I call it, the petri dish of
okay.
this experiment with charter schools and privatizing the public schools. Most of the public schools that have been on the north side have been shut down.
Yes.
And replaced by charters who have not been successful in so-called closing the achievement gap. The achievement gap is a manufactured crisis. When Ronald Reagan, no, Bush, introduced the No Child Left Behind, he put into place these standardized tests. They started measuring our children's intelligence based on the intelligence of the average white child.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, children of color are not achieving. So if I give you a crisis, then I open up the door for the big money, the Walton family, the Kramer family, these charter school partners, Teach for America.
The Koch brothers. Yeah, don't forget
the Koch
brothers.
Brothers, all of
you're
them
right.
to step in, and then they start diving for that pot of money.
Okay.
Gates Foundation, when the public schools started accepting money from the Gates Foundation, thinking that it was just a grant, you then open yourself up to being told what to do by people who don't have education backgrounds. Because if you want this money, I'm going to pull your string.
Okay. Go right ahead. Continue on, sister.
Continue on.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Alvin. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to interject. I'm looking at the Itasca Project, and I'm looking at a meeting they held in 2004. And the list of names on that meeting, Sandra Gardenbring from the Vice President, University of Minnesota, Robert Brudix at the time, University of Minnesota President, St. Paul Mayor Randy Kelly, Mayor of Minneapolis, R.T. Ryback, Governor Pahlente, James McNary, 3M, John Campbell, Wells Fargo Regional Chairman, and Richard Anderson, Head of Northwest Airlines, Janet Dolan, Tenant Company, and Mary Carlson, Nelson, head of the Carlson Company. So, yeah, this was in the planning for a long
this
time.
This has been in the planning since it started. If you go back to when they started strangling North by closing down Franklin, they stopped feeding kids into North. This has been in the works for a long time. Long time.
Absolutely.
And we have, and the community has been bamboozled into thinking that these standardized tests are the end-all, be-all of our children's intelligence, and they are not. I have students who can run a whole household budget and find resources. I can't test that by that little test. I can't do that. And why would I want my child's intelligence equated with that of the average white students? Who said that their intelligence is more superior to my child?
Okay.
So that's what we
other
have
than,
to start
other
thinking
than white
about.
Researchers. But go ahead.
Other than
white
researchers who
right.
said it.
Yeah.
And so we're allowing them to tell us that our kids aren't achieving. Our kids are hearing that they're not achieving. So how do you expect for them to come into the schools and sit down and take in whatever learning is supposed to be taking
right.
place?
Let me ask you a question.
Beat them over the head for 20-plus
right.
years that they're not.
Right. Let me ask you a question within the context of what you've been saying in the last couple of minutes. What is your observation about the role of the current black superintendent of schools, Bernadette Johnson?
Look at all you have to do is follow the names and follow the money, and you will see all the people who are involved in all of this. She's opened the door for Teach for America to come in. Wendy Kopp makes $400,000 a year. Why are we paying a headhunter's fee of $5,000 per Teach for America candidate to come in to our community and teach our kids, and they don't even have education backgrounds. They don't have credentials. If I want to go to the Southwest Minneapolis and teach, they ask me, what are my credentials?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to school? What degrees do you have?
Mm-hmm.
I can't be over there coming out of an Ivy League school with an archaeology degree talking about I'm getting ready to teach your kid math.
Right, right.
They
okay.
won't try that in Southwest Minneapolis. They won't
now,
try that. So why is it acceptable in the African-American, Latino, Native American communities? Why is that acceptable?
All right, let me ask this continued question. What then should we expect as it pertains to the duly elected Minneapolis Board of Education? What do you see their role, if any?
One of the representatives was in town for 3 months, and he was voted on the board. And backed by big money. So why would he be allowed, Josh Remnitz?
Yes, a large donation from the mayor of the city, right.
Yes, he was backed by the mayor of the city. He was backed by the Kramer family, which run Men Post.
Mm-hmm.
And the son is also one of the executive board members of Teach for America or something like that he does, but they're all caught up in the same group of people across. If you look at all of the different things that are going on, you can connect the dots. General Mills is behind it, Teach for America, Lead Workers, all of that. If you go over to the Davis Center, you will run into more Teach for America people in $96,000 a year jobs than you will people who have been working in education for 20-plus years.
Let me now move to this question, because this organization is the sweetheart of the conservative right. Nas,
mm-hmm.
talk to us a little bit about Nas, your observation, because obviously you are extremely astute and have done your homework. So our responsibility is to utilize a member and citizen of our community. Nas, who has not issued an annual report yet and have been in business 2 years and have spent
who
about...
Who you mean? Nas?
Nas, yeah. That's a Nas Nas, yeah.
That right there is a scam.
Okay.
Mm.
That, to me, is a scam because if a child, you're getting money and your position is supposed to be that you are going to help the community, our kids of color and families who are in crisis. And when you are brought a family in crisis and you tell them they have to be on a waiting list and they don't have a place to stay, what are you getting all that money for?
Well, let me indicate to you, madam, and to our listening audience, one of the reasons I asked that question, tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the leading paper here in Minneapolis, will have a story in which the leadership of the organization announced that they have confirmed and have brought over 500 families into their mission and goal of working and involving those families within the geographical area that has been designated for them under the proposal and RFPs and all that. Now, there's been some reflections just in the last number of hours that there are names on that list of people who never received any service whatsoever, and I just hope mm-hmm. that's not true. But there have been former staff members, and Mr. Allen, in fact, interviewed one a number of weeks ago, about 7 weeks ago, Mr. Allen, if I remember correctly, who had worked there and quit after seeing the plantation mentality and et cetera that was in play. But this article in tomorrow morning's paper would indicate, particularly, and is obviously supposed to correspond with the announcement that this outgoing mayor is going to be the new overlord for the education of the African-American. It raises some serious questions. You haven't had an annual report. You haven't had an audit. Now you're saying you have 500 families within the Pacific geographical area who have been brought into the program. You have met your goal and et cetera. And yet no one can, and maybe I'm mistaken, maybe you can help me if I'm wrong and off track, but please feel free to correct me. There is no verification process.
Not that I know of. I know that you can cook any book, and
okay.
you can grab numbers from the sky, but I can say that I know that they've been hiring a lot of young people.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they have a lot of staff hired over there. What exactly they do, I don't know.
And I understand some of that staff over the last 5 weeks or so has been threatened when they have gone to the homes and knocked on the doors of people that they have been confronted with some very unpleasant situations, which then raises a question about just how much information is really out here in the community that gives a clearer and more honest picture. Okay. Anything else for us? You've been an inspiration, Rod.
Yeah,
if you will.
The only thing I can tell you is R.T. Ryback was real. He spent a lot of his time pushing for the legislation to give that money to Teach for America. And to
mm-hmm.
allow and to call in the teaching board to sign off on their variances because his daughter was a candidate for Teach for America.
Go ahead.
And he has aligned himself, hook, line, and sinker, with the reform movement. And a lot of people they're tired of calling it reform movement. They want to call it deformers movement, but it really is a concerted effort to privatize public schools. And
oops.
If we allow the public schools to be privatized and taken away, then we are setting our children up, and we're setting back our communities some 50, 60 years where we fought to have an equal education. We're setting back because private school institutions don't have to take everybody. These charter schools don't take all of the kids.
Absolutely.
They
absolutely correct.
They counsel them out. If they are not showing good scores,
mm-hmm.
if they are not showing good behavior, if they don't show up all the time the way they're supposed to, if they don't come in certain uniforms, if they don't have a clean tie or a clean shirt, these kids are being counseled out.
Yes, they are.
Because
the
they are not
absolutely
conforming.
Correct. Yeah.
They're not conforming to this no excuses model, which is really a plantation mentality. You don't tell a kid if they come to your room and they're hungry that's not an excuse. You
correct.
Don't tell a kid that if they had nowhere to sleep and they're moving from pillar to post that's not an excuse. We need to deal with the real issue when it comes to educating our children, and the real issue is a social issue, and we need to have affordable jobs, we need to have wraparound services, be it mental health, be it medical health, We need all of that within our schools in this day and age, because a lot of the issues are arriving on the doorstep of the schools, and we can't deal with it. But teachers and unions have been made to be the scapegoats.
Yes. All right. All right. By the way, and next Wednesday's program, I think Mr. Allen and myself will have to go a little bit deeper into the current plan that's afoot with respect to mental health. Folks better recognize that there is a very committed mission, which is contrary to the interest and the survival of the African-American, to begin to deal with the issue. And I've cited a position paper written by Mayor R.T. Ryback in 2009 and presented at the League of Cities, which people should have been disturbed with respect to how he identified the problem here at Minneapolis as being black youth, particularly black males, and as being a part of basically a criminal element and discipline that would possibly not be reversed. What we will do, Mr. Allen, is that we will read some excerpts next week from the position paper by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis.
I want to ask this question. Have you all read the charter school compact?
Which one? I mean, the one currently around here or what?
The one, Minneapolis Public Schools Charter School Compact? And looked at
I'm
the
aware
name
of
signed
of
on
the
here?
One, yeah, I'm aware of some revisions in the one that was consummated as it pertains to the Seed Academy. I'm aware of that. I think we probably have. But do we need to review it again?
I'm thinking about the name. Look at the names who have signed on to that. Look at the
right.
names who signed on to that, and then cross-reference with everything else.
All right. Thank
There's
you, Carla. We appreciate the depth and research that you've done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Very interesting caller. A lot of depth, Mr. Allen. Give me your observation. And that phone number and phone lines are open now. We're not closed. We have another 15 minutes here on the program with Donnie and Ronnie, Ronnie and Donnie, you know. But give that number again, Mr. Allen. Throw it on out there.
That number is 347-426-3904. Again, phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, I was just looking – I found a NAV 2012 report, and, you know, one of the things is the Family Academy curriculum where they have families to come in, and they have some real pretty colors on it, but this is problematic. 36 of the parents completed one course. 24 parents completed two courses.
Okay.
Six completed all three courses. Six.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm looking at this. That's not good. That's not good at all. And then when you're looking at, you know, North Minneapolis in general, you know, you're looking at the employment in North Minneapolis, and this is another thing where Ryback comes in. He had no opportunities for the parents. There's 63% unemployment people that are unemployed in North Minneapolis, and 14% work part-time, 1% is either seasonal or contract, and full-time 22%.
Okay.
So that's minimal there. And
community can't survive with those percentages. Okay,
no,
go ahead.
Can't. There's no way you can function. And then it just shows that poverty becomes a distraction for anything, for information, for politics. And I'm just looking at this NAS report, and I'm looking – I mean, it has a whole bunch of pretty colors, Mr. Edwards. And
is it colored and sequential to hypnotize you?
Yeah, because I can't turn away from it. It has me going to every page, look at these little circles and dots and numbers, and I guess I did go there to actually see because the young lady was talking about you know, there are people that they've hired there. They've hired quite a few people, and right
yes,
now
they
they're. They're promoting their NAS ball, which is Saturday, November 16th at the Depot in downtown Minneapolis. Tickets are $100 a piece, and the sponsors are Target, Promise, Land O'Lakes, and North Memorial Healthcare, and Kemp's, and General Mills.
Okay. They're the sponsors of this event, and at $100 a ticket, right?
Yes, yes.
So when corporations sponsor something like that, and you have that kind of price, and the food probably only costs about $4 because it's the worst food in the world, I mean, so that means that the businesses get reimbursed. See, people don't pay any attention to that. So the businesses, the big white corporations say, oh, yeah, we're contributing and we're supporting. But when you pay that kind of money at the table, you know, the corporations get reimbursed. They don't. And then they turn around and write it off as a tax deduction.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. $100 a ticket, huh? Yeah.
Yep.
Boy, I bet that could have fed a lot of those families that came to the achievement zone and talked in terms of the despair. You know, many of them affected by the tornado. Remember the tornado?
Yeah, I remember the 2011 tornado.
Yeah, remember the tornado?
Yeah, Nancy was her name. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I still think of Karen Alawota, a great servant, if you will, who lost her 22-year career when Sandy Vargas just cut her head off. You know what I mean? But I understand we're not supposed to talk about that, but I'm talking about it. And that's really what's sad. By the way, did we ever get a final report from the tornado committee? I mean, how much money they got, how much they spent? I mean, we spent a lot of time in late 2011 and 2012 and never could get any answers.
I have not seen anything, you know, tornado. I'm just seeing if they posted anything, because sometimes they don't tell you anything. They try to sneak it in like it's been there.
Okay.
The North Minneapolis tornado, North Minneapolis, I'm just looking for files. No. I mean, I'm looking at a story here right now from MinPost. This is It was October 18th, 2013. North Minneapolis still struggling to recover from 2011 tornado.
this was on MinPost?
Yeah, with a blue tarp on the house. Yeah.
Blue tarp. So for our domestic and international listeners, the blue tarps were symbolic of your house was almost destroyed, and we put a blue tarp on there, and then at some point in time, somebody will come up and fix it up. Many of those tarps have been there since May of 2011. The blue tarps, I swear. Maybe we can form a group that certainly will be dealing with that. By the way, just a couple of quick updates for because we have a multiplicity of listeners and et cetera that like to stay on top of every aspect. The word is that the Minneapolis Police Department will announce what action, if any, will be taken against the two police officers in the infamous Green Bay case.
Mm.
Those were the officers who disrespected their chief, but more importantly, disrespected their own fellow black officers in a act of significant rage, fighting and attacking African Americans there on the street in Green Bay, who handled themselves very well. But some action is supposed to be taken in the coming weeks, so I just wanted to kind of pass that on to many. I understand also that I guess some kind of civil suit is in place as it pertains to the tragic circumstances surrounding the death of T.T. Franklin.
Okay.
A case that now ranks certainly the situation in California with Lopez, which is now driving the Latino Hispanic community towards the same cliff, if you will, that we in Black America went over with Trayvon Martin and that folks went over here in Minneapolis after the brutal murder execution of Terrence Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to let people know these are still somewhat active situations, investigations, judicial actions and et cetera. So, you know, leadership hasn't indicated anything. And I don't even know if the T.T. Franklin committee still exists. Have you seen anything on their website, Don?
No, I haven't seen anything. And, you know, I think this Mel Reeves guy has been pretty quiet, and I haven't, you know, he was not authorized to say anything about these folks, and you know, there was nothing. And I'm looking at nothing there, nothing.
Yeah, calling up here. I see nothing here in Studio B. So I was asking Mr. Allen's much, much quicker with the getting extracting the information, et cetera. But I wondered what had happened. I'd ask some questions of the attorney, Mr. Patton, what was happening with that. And, you know, I guess right now they're trying to move towards discovery, whatever that's supposed to do, as mm-hmm. it pertains to preparing for the civil case, if you will. Well, Mr. Allen, we've got about 10 minutes here.
10 minutes.
Anything that we've kind of missed, and you know, the phone lines are still open. Feel free to give us a call.
Yes, the phone lines are wide open. Again, 347-426-3904. You know what? I am searching for this, Mr. Edwards, because I want to be absolutely correct. Let me just see if I can find it. I was really shocked to see Carrie Levin run a story titled, and it's coming up right, North High Makes Comeback with Climbing Enrollment. I think they went from like 6 to 7. And,
right.
I mean, it was stuff like that. I mean, it was. I mean, let me turn the video off. It's playing in my ear. Okay. And, it used to have, in 2004, it had 1,100 students. And in 2010, they had 265 students, so they say. And today, it has 158 students compared to the 67 students last year. But we were being told that it had over 100 students last year. Now the truth comes out, there were 67 students. That is not enough to pay the light bill, the gas bill, the delivery toilet paper delivery bill.
Absolutely.
You know?
And by the way, though, this comes at a time when a shout out to football coaching staff at North, who really have to draw some of their players from alternative schools and et cetera. But they were seated number one in their 2A, if I'm not mistaken. They won the game last week. I'll have to check, maybe have something for us next Wednesday, but they are trying to get into the Sweet 8, as we call it, and be playing at the Metrodome. But congratulations to the young athletes at North High School, given all the severity. They had an outstanding season, 6-2 regular record, records now 7-2, and like I said, we'll have to check and see what has happened. If they played another playoff game, if they're still on the road. But I think it's just important that we give a shout-out to North because Adams' father and son, Charles Adams III, the son, and Charles Adams II, the father, both law enforcement officers here in the city of Minneapolis, have just done a miraculous job, Mr. Allen. I know you're not the big sports fan. I try to get Don interested. Don doesn't have the time. He's kind of a nerd, if you will. But this has been a tremendous accomplishment. Again, kudos to the players and kudos to the supporters of North and kudos to the Adams father and son, or in this case, son and father. Have just done a tremendous coaching job up there, if you will. Really have instilled a significant level of pride because, as Mr. Allen just pointed out, and the school district lied last year to us. They said there was over 200 or it was 150. Now we find out, you know, the hallways basically look like a inner sanctum.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But that, you know, the caller that we had, our last caller who really had done, obviously, her research, she said some very interesting things about the master plan to really make North go away. You know what I'm saying? And it's quite clear now with R.T. Ryback moving into the catbird seat, if you will, as the new, quote-unquote, overseer. I imagine we'll probably even have a coronation for him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, yeah.
King Ryback, Emperor Ryback. Clearly, the mission now is just to make public education just disappear, particularly in North Minneapolis. See, we may get into a situation where we'd be a most divided city, where in the white areas of South Minneapolis and maybe Northeast, we will have still access to the public education. But public education and the right of an African-American student to receive an education, not training, not be trained like a monkey, will forever disappear. And we may very well have you understand this word as a former military person, we will have a garrisoned city.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are paying any attention to the fact that we will have a garrisoned city educationally with regards to what is getting ready to happen with these different organizations and big, big, big money. And they tell me the envelopes are really being spread around for the Leadership Alliance and some other groups. Maybe our good friend William English will pick up enough money he can pay off that debt to Franklin National Bank.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you ain't supposed to talk about that either. $600,000.
Yeah, big money. Big money there. But Mr. Edwards, by the time we're on air next week, Minneapolis citizens will have done their ranked choice voting.
Yes.
They will have voted for a mayor. Now, I guess for someone to win, they're going to need at least, 50% of our majority of the vote?
50 and 1. 50.1%, I think. I understand. Mm-hmm. By charter and state constitution, that's normally what you have to have, 50.1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, in other words, 50%, and if you find one vote, two votes, that's 50.1. In fact, we will be able next Wednesday to articulate and curtsy the election. I assume that by next Wednesday night, 24 hours after the polls have closed, because we will be going on the air at 24 and a half hour after the polls have closed, right? And
yep.
So we should be able to declare a winner, right?
Yes, yes, yes. It's next, the 5th, right? If I'm not mistaken.
It's next Tuesday. Next Tuesday is the election.
It's the 5th.
Yeah.
Yep, November 5th.
And so on our broadcast, which, by the way, will be the night before the Redskins come to town to do a little scalping, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to talk with clarity, if you will, absolute clarity, about who the new mayor of this great metropolis is. Now, by the way, I hope that the mayor has a plan going in along with at least possibly as many as 7 new council members on the 13-member council, because this city's got a lot of debt, Don.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah, they got a lot of debt, and it's just not the Viking Stadium. It is the Target Center. It is the Convention Center. It's some of the other objectives that they say that they have. This city's incurring a lot of debt. Now, the Star Tribune, a month and a half ago, said that we need to change the configuration of Minneapolis. In other words, we don't have enough employable white folks in the city of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not making it up. That was in the Star Tribune a month and a half ago. They did, 2 months ago, they did a couple big editorials saying that, that the city needed a population that allowed the city to be a livable place. And, it was quite interesting. They did a big editorial, and then they did a big page and a half story. And what they basically said is that there's just too many people of color, too many poor people in Minneapolis, and, of course, that's hurting the tax base, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe we can get some of the professors at some of our big colleges around here. Maybe they'll give us a shout-out, give us a call in. We're receptive to a exchange and dialogue. In fact, this is my question as we reach the end of tonight's program. Is there enough of a body wealth, in other words, a wealth of body, if you will, or body of wealth in this city to allow this city to incur without significantly raising corporate taxes, which will never happen, to be able to pay off these debts?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair question. Okay. Well, I see we're at the end, Mr. Allen. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it has, and we'll see what happens next week with the mayor's race. We'd like to thank everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week. See you then.
All right.